Broadcasting live from Superior, Wisconsin, I'm Joy Cardine, and this is The Week in Review. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, September the 19th, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, or you might be right here at Barker's Island Inn in Superior. If you're driving by, just pull in and join us. If you have a news item from this week that you want to talk about, you can raise your hand in our audience, and producer Cynthia Schuster will wander over with a microphone. Everyone else listening can call 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And what a week it was in terms of the financial markets and politics and our pocketbooks. The big Wall Street firm Lehman Brothers goes under. Merrill Lynch sells itself to the Bank of America. The huge insurance company AIG teeters on the edge and gets a government bailout. And last night, a plan for a massive bailout is announced to rescue investment banks. What's going on? Who's to blame for all of this? What will fix all of this? We will start with this topic with our two guests this hour and talk about how this is being played out on the presidential campaign trail. We'll move on to other issues as we go along. We are happy to have with us two guests who called Douglas County home. You heard from them together once about a month ago when John Munson, our regional manager for Northern Wisconsin, was filling in for me. We welcome Craig Rosand, the chairman of the Douglas County Republican Party. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us, Ron Merschart, a professor emeritus of history at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks to both of you for being here. Well, I think I can speak for many of us. This is kind of scary. Can you help us first, Professor Merschart, understand what's happening, why we're seeing this meltdown of sorts?
If you really thought either Craig or I had the answer to what to do, we would be much sought out to find an answer for the people in Washington and New York and elsewhere. It's been startling. It's been shocking. And until the last week, everybody was saying, oh, no, no, you can't use the word depression. You can't use the word depression. Not till unemployment hits a particular striking figure. Well, I'm waiting to see the next round of employment figures, because some of these mergers have, of course, resulted in thousands of people being put on the street. How many people do you need in the financial firms when you're merging large financial firms? We're going to see a lot higher unemployment, and maybe people won't be quite so blasé about the term depression anymore.
Do you think depression is appropriate, Craig?
Well, we keep changing the terms. We didn't like the word depression, so we call it recession. Maybe in the future it'll just be a rolling readjustment. But, you know, we've had a 25% downturn in the market. The average is 33%. I don't see a super meltdown of 40%. As far as being worried about whether or not investment bankers are going to be able to find work, I'm not too concerned about that, Ron. But I think there's plenty of blame to go around in this. I think it all starts from, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, created by the government, by a democratically controlled Congress. But there's plenty of blame. You know, back in 1999, when Congress separated banking from investments, they allowed them, excuse me, to merge, to work together. It was a Democratic president and a Republican Congress. In the last 2 years, we've had a Democratic Congress and a Republican president ignoring the problem. I think everybody's running for cover, especially the politicians out there that accept PAC money from Lehman Brothers and AIG and Fannie and Freddie Mac, and there's been a lot of money in the issues.
How do you react to this news that the government is going to be another massive bailout and rescue these investment bankers?
I think it's the wrong thing to do. I think that, yes, you do have to pick and choose which investment bank is more important to rescue than another. They decided not to do Lehman Brothers, but they did AIG, and I think that's because Lehman Brothers had segregated accounts. People with mutual funds, 401Ks, 403Bs, are secure in that. It's the people who are invested in the company itself. But most Americans are invested in the market and are very concerned about this. Democrats overwhelmingly think that the government isn't doing enough, and Republicans think the government isn't is going to do too much. But what's important is that 54% of independents are worried that the government is going to do too much, which means on the economic issues, John McCain has an advantage in the market.
Well, what would be too much, Professor Mershart?
I don't know. It's Craig's term. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I think the rage for deregulation has been one of the things that's led us to the situation. And under the circumstances now, a lot of people who were deregulators last week have turned around and changed their minds, including John McCain. So basically, I don't think anyone has the answer. I've always found economists very interesting figures. I'm not one myself. I don't predict. I don't believe in prediction because I'm an historian. I analyze what has happened. And quite frankly, this is going to be a wonderful opportunity for people to do some comparative reanalysis of the last couple of decades, but also projecting back over earlier crises. So I don't have any clever answers.
You don't have to have the answer, Professor Mershart, but do you think Barack Obama has the answer?
I think right now he's scrambling for the formula. He wouldn't be human if he weren't. I don't think he was prepared for this any more than the rest of us were. And so now he's trying to find the right answer with whoever is his body of advisors. And we'll hear in time, because they all play the rhetoric game and they all seek to grab the public imagination. The same public who themselves are not terribly sure what the answers are and have to be convinced. So it should be very interesting.
Yeah. So you think John McCain has the answer, Craig?
I think they're all scrambling. I think most Americans agree that large tax increases during a recession is the wrong answer, especially doubling the capital gains tax, which would have a profound effect on the stock market. You know, most people are now in the investor class. They have more than $5,000 invested in the stock market, or they're part of a pension plan, like WRS is a pension plan that all Wisconsin and public employees, like myself and like you,
yeah,
Ron, are members of. And so it affects the vast majority of Americans. And so instability in the market plays a profound effect on the psychology. You know, being able to predict the future is what the market is all about. Oil goes up and down because people think there's going to be a greater supply or a lesser supply. Speculators aren't separate from the market. They are the market. And so confidence in the market is, to a very large extent, part of the game. If we can stabilize the market, yesterday the stock market went up by 410 points, the largest increase in 6 years. Of course, 2 days before that, it went down by 504.
Mm-hmm. It's a roller coaster. Let's welcome in a caller. Dan in Franksville is with us first. Good morning, Dan. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good show. I'm worried when I hear this back and forth stuff. Congress, you know, was Democratic or Republican. I'm worried that these people are hired on both sides, because we've been going back and forth with this stuff for, 30 or 40 years, if not longer. And these people are hired from people that have a lot of money at stake, and they give money to either side, and then the public sits here and listens that the Democrats did it, the Republicans did it. Well, they both did it because they've been both hired by the same people, and the media is compliant because they work for the same people that hire the people in Washington.
It's everyone's fault.
Yeah. You know, I looked up just this morning senators that had accepted money from the National Association of Realtors. And there were 24 Democratic senators and 27 Republican senators. And I'm sure they're all starting to scramble where they had received PAC money. And business does, and unions do, have a tremendous influence. It's, you know, watch how your representative votes and follow the money, and you'll find a remarkable similarity.
Let me ask you both, before we take a short pause, what effect will this financial crisis have on the presidential race? Many are saying this is now going to be an advantage for Barack Obama. Do you agree, Professor Mershart?
Well, again, you're asking me to predict the future, and I don't do that. But I think inevitably it will have an effect. But what effect, and how the public at large is going to react, I'm not sure. I imagine if this chaos continues, then we're probably going to see at least an assignment of blame to the incumbent president who's not running for re-election. So it makes it somewhat different, the degree to which McCain can separate himself from the Bush administration and its policies is a key issue, although no one saw this coming. That's obvious. As a matter of fact, it's over-optimism. It'll keep on going up, 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 up. That has driven the market, and you see the product.
Craig Rosand?
Well, I think it's going to be an advantage for John McCain among independent voters. It won't swing any moderate Democrats or people who are affiliated with the Democratic Party, and I think the Republican vote is pretty much been consolidated in the last few weeks, at least among conservatives. And it's the independents who are invested in the market, and 54% of them are worried that the government is going to intervene too much. And what that means is, as we bail out AIG, it cost every American $248. And as we keep bailing out one company after another, it has to either result in a dilution of the currency. The Fed just puts out a bond and decreases the value of the dollar and assumes bad debt. And that's how we got into this in the first place, bad debt and a devalued dollar. So repeating this is not going to be a good thing.
Craig, you're an optimist.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
You're finding things that will redound to the benefit of your group and your party in a situation that's not going to benefit anybody that I can see in the short term.
I guess we'll find out in 6 weeks.
Yep.
We are talking with Craig Rosand, chairman of the Douglas County Republican Party, and Ron Merchart, professor emeritus of history at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. It's a Superior edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, inviting you to join in with your questions and your thoughts from the news this week at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. If you're here in the audience at Barker's Island Inn in Superior, you can raise your hand and we'll get you on the air as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. The Joy Ride is in Superior today. We are taking the show on the road, hitting the campaign trail every Friday. From now through the end of October, we'll be visiting a different location every Friday. Next week, we're in Sturgeon Bay at the Inn at Cedar Crossing. So join us if you're in that region next Friday as we broadcast live from Door County. Right now we're in Superior, and we are conducting our Week in Review with two guests from the Superior region. Craig Rosand is chair of the Douglas County Republican Party, and Ron Merchart is professor emeritus of history at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. We'll go back to the phones. Jana in Green Bay is with us next. Hi, Jana. You're on the air.
I have a question about, it's more of a historical question. In my lifetime, I'm Generation X, and I've noticed different races have different themes. And the last couple races, with Bush included, were very much religious rhetoric going on. And this race, I haven't noticed so much, but I have noticed that it seems to be a divide between generations. So, for instance, my parents are not necessarily Republican or Democrat, but they are really clinging to McCain. In my generation, all of my friends and all of the people I know that are my age are really focused on Obama. And so I'm just wondering if this race isn't really more about generations and about class. So wealthy people would be more interested in what's going on with McCain, and people like just middle class and under would be more interested in Obama.
Jana, thank you very much. Well, there's a history question for you, Professor Merchart.
Yeah, and it's one of those tricky things to answer. One of the things that's clear is that there has been a certain response by age cohorts to the candidates, but it hasn't been pure and it hasn't been perfect. It's not the best area to judge. As a matter of fact, I've been participating in some polling. I will tell you this before Craig does. I'm a former chairman of the Democratic Party, So I'm on the other side of the street. But in some of the polling that we've done for the Obama campaign, the cohort, age cohort I was handed, I guess they looked at my gray hairs, was people age 65 to 87. That was the oldest person I called. And the people were rural people. They were outside the city of Superior. They were in the small villages and rural townships in this area. And in some ways, the balance of support reflected what we know from this area over the past many elections. That is to say, they were Democratic in majority. However, there were specialized responses from time to time. And I'm not just trying to be flippant here, but at least one person said to me when I asked him who he was supporting for president, he told me he was supporting Palin. I pointed out that was a difficulty since she wasn't running for president, and he hung up on me.
Yeah. Well, so. Does that go to show, though, that Sarah Palin is getting the majority of the
Absolutely.
Attention on the campaign trail right now?
She has. She has had tremendous impact. I think that will taper off somewhat, but then maybe I'm being optimistic the way Craig is sometimes. it's clear that the impact has been various. For example, you quoted in the news review the fact that women were positive toward Palin's candidacy. I think that's true. I hope somebody asked the follow-up question, and are you going to vote for the Republican ticket? Because, of course, a lot of women are pleased to see a woman at the top of the list, and they should be.
Yeah.
I've been a feminist for a long time, and that seems to me to be a very positive aspect of it.
Craig Rosenbeck, though, to Jana was wondering if this race was really a generational race, and it's the young people are going to vote for Barack Obama, and the old people are going to vote for John McCain.
That's a very typical presidential strategy: young against the old, rich against the poor, class warfare. I think it's coming down to the economy and values. And, you know, when you do a survey in Douglas County, you can expect a huge bias towards one candidate versus the other. Just out of curiosity in our audience, are there any conservatives in the audience? Okay, well, one conservative is more than a match for a dozen liberals. But
what does that phrase mean?
That's a
conservative
joke.
Conservative and liberal? No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Those terms don't catch me. I could be a conservative and be a Democrat. That's entirely plausible and possible. So I don't know that you can generalize on a quick catchphrase. I wouldn't use it.
Yeah. Well,
thank you very much.
Is Barack Obama one of the most liberal senators in the U.S. Senate, Professor Mershart?
He's certainly a liberal senator. There's no question about that. And the bills he's introduced have reflected his perspective. But at this point, we're looking at a society that not just over the economic issue, but certainly there, is a little bit shaken, and it's wondering what the future is going to hold. And we have no incumbent president, which makes a difference in the decision people make on election day. So all in all, it's going to be interesting to see what the results are going to be. I've always had fun taking the several counties of Wisconsin and comparing all of them to themselves.
What do you mean?
Well, I take the figures from an election, let's say this election, and compare them to the last election and the one before that. I look at the differences in gubernatorial elections versus the elections of with the president at the top of the list. That's what I mean when I say I'm an historian. I look at that sort of data to tell me what happened in the election. And quite frankly, I'm going to be fascinated by this election.
This election is fascinating. It's kind of curious. You mentioned Barack Obama's bills in the Senate, and I really can't think of one except comprehensive sex education for kindergarten students. I think one of
Shame
the reasons.
Shame on you.
All right. Well, we can get in. This
no,
is a fight that's
a piece
being
of garbage.
Played. This is being played out
this
on the campaign
trail. This is supposed to be
trail.
Between the left and the right, and I'm glad to see you're sitting on my left.
Well, I'll tell you something.
It's my turn to continue, Ron. All Talking right. about Sarah Palin. You know, one of the reasons she's grabbed such national attention is after just a few days, or weeks now, we know more about Sarah Palin than we do Barack Obama. We know what small-town mayors do. You know, we've called them for loose dogs and potholes and sewer problems. We know how they manage budgets. They're constantly balancing roads with public safety. We don't know what a community organizer does. We know what governors do. We know she fought the oil companies in Alaska. She used her veto pen in order to cut $238 in state earmarks, but we're not exactly sure what Barack Obama has done as a senator. You say you know of the bills he's presented in the Senate. I don't. Could you please elaborate?
We're not going to play that game of pedophagy. No, seriously, no. Over the years, in both the Illinois State Senate and in the Senate of the United States, he's been engaged in the legislative process. There have been a lot of bills, and some of them have borne his name. The same thing could be said for any candidate, and quite frankly, the number of successful legislative initiatives by Mr. McCain has not been staggering, and he's been a long time in the Senate of the United States and the House of Representatives before that. So, that's the kind of easy, cheap rhetoric that I don't want to engage in. I tell you frankly, the race is going to be over more than name calling, and it better be, because it's a significant issue. It's a difficult time, and who is going to be in charge of our future over the next 4 years is no small question.
Let me just jump in. Did Barack Obama really want to teach kindergartners sex education, or did he want to protect them or let them protect themselves against sexual predators?
In fairness, it's a bill bundled with a pile of other legislation and earmarks for which he voted. But he did support it. You know, some of the bills that John McCain authored and supported are bills that I, as a conservative, didn't like. And that's kind of what makes him the original maverick. I didn't care for the McCain-Kennedy bill on immigration, because it would have led to amnesty. I didn't care for the McCain-Lieberman bill on global warming, and I didn't like the McCain-Feingold bill, which restricted free speech. Now, the average person out there probably doesn't have their own political action committee and isn't too concerned about that. Just a coincidence that, party insiders do.
John McCain
basically his bucking the Republican Party that has made him the moderate and is getting him so many independent votes. Sarah Palin did the same thing in Alaska. She took Republicans to task in Alaska.
John McCain and Sarah Palin are making the rounds, doing town hall meetings now. They were in Green Bay last night. Do you really think, Craig, that Sarah Palin is convincing those voters now that she is prepared, ready to be commander-in-chief on day one?
Well, now you make it a military question.
Well, that's the question that's being brought up.
She's as qualified as Barack Obama to command the military. Yes, she is, just as Hillary Clinton would have been as qualified to command the military. In other words, unless you've been a general or on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, you probably don't know much about foreign affairs. I think that's why Biden was picked. But I think we have to pick our candidates outside of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on an occasional basis. What we really need, most of the issues, most of the spending of the federal government is domestic. And what you need are people who have executive experience, whether it's a small-town mayor with executive experience or a governor. At least they've run departments, they've proposed budgets, they've enforced the law. And that's important.
Well, we needn't go into the study of Sarah Palin's relatively brief history as an executive. But the key thing to look at is the values and the direction and the thrust of people. Sarah Palin's appeal is to people who are clearly on the right wing. Sarah Palin's appeal is clearly to people who are religious conservatives. And that was a very self-conscious decision by Mr. McCain. That's why she was chosen. She wasn't chosen because of her vast experience in foreign affairs. And frankly, I think the frivolous remarks that we've heard so far from her about foreign affairs make it clear that she won't be consulted on those questions.
Let me go to the audience.
But you're predicting the future.
Marvin in Superior has a question. Hi, Marvin.
Good morning. I was wondering, on these issues of today and the talk of the week and all the problems we're having, we're hearing a lot of talk from the candidates on what they plan on doing 5 months from now when they would take office. We're hearing very little on what the current, you know, Democratic Congress and Republican, you know, presidential president is doing on today. And 5 months from now, you know, I could be out of my farm by then, you know, on waiting on the candidates. I want to know what we're doing now.
Yeah, who can...
You want to go first, Ron?
Well, one of the things we're looking at, and I think if you followed congressional actions in recent months, it becomes clear, one of the things we're looking at is stalemate. Things are not happening in Washington. Things are not happening in Congress. And if you're looking for a solution from that center, it's not happening. Partly it's the rigidity of the unwillingness of both parties to work across the aisle. They don't cooperate. They don't trust one another. And therefore, we're looking at a Congress that's non-functional. And that's unfortunate. I think you're likely to see a sizable turnover in members of the House and Senate, in part for just that reason. People who've looked for answers from Washington and who've looked to the legislature for answers haven't found them. And especially on the big picture questions that you're talking about, the economy and the likelihood of people to survive faced with the mortgages that they're dealing with, these things haven't happened. And they may happen now, finally, because yesterday the key figures in the Congress and the key figures in the administration that deals with the economy sat down and talked. That's marvelous. Where have they been for a long time now? I think that's the area that the citizen can criticize his government and criticize him rather sharply, because we haven't found solutions. We found a lack of energy and imagination, and we have found rigid partisanship. And that's something we all have to look to and try and find our answers in. It kind of surprises me that both parties picked incumbent senators as their candidates. That's a rarity. We go back to John F. Kennedy for the last time we elected a United States senator to be president of the United States. Before that, most of the people who served were people who had a broad experience in government. In this case, we're not doing it. We're taking a lot of this on faith. And frankly, that's the reason why I think the public at large is a little bit anxious and wary right now.
Yeah. Craig Brosnan, what needs to be done now, and who is doing it?
Well, a lot of comments just made. You know, very few can claim to be Washington outsiders when they're both senators. And you're right, John F. Kennedy was the last person to go directly from the Senate to the presidency. And before that, I think it was Harding. We most frequently have governors. But when you take a look at the voting record of the two senators, I can't find a single instance where Barack Obama voted against the goals of his party. John McCain got into trouble with the conservative base of the Republican Party by frequently voting against. He's like the original maverick. I'd call him more of a moderate. And I wasn't really thrilled with the candidacy until, of course, Sarah Palin was picked. I think she reinvigorates the Republican Party. She is a fiscal conservative, and not just a religious conservative. And I'm getting a little bit tired of people pointing out somebody's religion, that you're an evangelical and religion somehow is going to be a disqualifier in a presidential election. She's a person of faith, and we should respect that.
Let me share an email from Fred in Baraboo, who writes, "Who pays for all these bailouts? Does the administration just print more money or borrow it from the Chinese? Why can't all these clever Wall Street CEOs who made their bets on pyramid schemes pay for the error of their ways?" Craig, should they?
Well, this is another blame and shame game, and we want to blame the executives of the large financial institutions, but there are millions of people out there that bought more of a house than they could afford on the speculation that they were going to make a profit. And I'm not so sure that I have a tiny little house. It's as big as a trailer, 816 square feet. I'm not so sure I want to pay additional tax dollars in order to bail out somebody who couldn't afford their $350,000 house because they took 120% mortgage with an arm on it. at some point, we're going to have to stop bailing people out. It's either going to be paying for in tax dollars, or the Fed is simply going to issue a bond and devalue our money, which makes my purchasing power less. At what point do we require people to be responsible for their own actions? And that's a tough question. They do it for AIG. They don't do it for laymans. There's plenty of shame, both Republicans and Democrats alike. Republican president, Democratic Congress. When this mess started back in 1999, when Congress, Republican Congress, allowed the merger between banks and financial securities, it was a Democratic president and a Republican Congress. And so I think there's going to be a lot of finger pointing. Most importantly, it's how do we get through this? Is it through higher taxes during a recession? How many companies do we bail out? How much government intervention should there be? And I think the more we can restrict government intervention, the better it is. We have to hit bottom before we bounce.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, part of the answer to your question, Joy, is yes. Yes, print more money. Yes, borrow more money. That's the thing that we're inevitably going to be forced to do. And that brings in all kinds of policy questions that are quite complex. And quite frankly, let me point out that if people were taking mortgages that exceeded their capacity to pay, bankers were willing to let them do it. And that, again, talk about blame. You can spread it around. You can spread
yes,
it around.
You can.
We are talking with Ron Merchart, Professor Emeritus of History at the University of Wisconsin-Superior, former chair of the Democratic Party of Douglas County. We also have with us the current chair of the Douglas County Republican Party, Craig Rosand, our two guests for this special Superior edition of The Week in Review. We are broadcasting live from Superior today, welcoming your input on the news this week at 1-800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@wpr.org, or if you're with us here at Barker's Inn, raise your hand and we'll get a microphone over to you. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, broadcasting live from Superior as our joyride has stopped in Superior today. Next week, we're going to be in Sturgeon Bay, by the way, the week after that in Madison, then in Milwaukee, every Friday through the end of October, broadcasting from a different community in Wisconsin. You can see the schedule. You can see how you can take part in all of these events by visiting our website, WPR.org. Very happy to be in Superior today with two guests from Douglas County, Craig Rosand and Ron Merchart, welcoming your thoughts and questions about the news of the week. We've spent pretty much the entire time so far talking about the financial crisis and its effect on the presidential race. One more question about the presidential race before we move on to some state issues and other issues. Barack Obama used to have a double-digit lead in the state of Wisconsin in the polls, the 13 percentage points in one poll. That's really tightened up. A Big Ten poll that was released yesterday shows that there is a tight race in virtually all of the Big Ten states except Illinois, Barack Obama's home state. He's well ahead. I think he's 1 point or 2 points ahead in Wisconsin. So that really big lead has narrowed down to just a couple of percentage points for Barack Obama in Wisconsin. I know, Professor Merchart, you have doubts as to whether that's completely accurate, these polls.
Well, my problem is with the methodology more than anything other. I told you I'd done some polling. I didn't mean I necessarily thought this was the perfect way to find out how people are thinking and how they're going to vote in some weeks. Part of the problem with this methodology is it does react to yesterday's news. If you ask people immediately after the primary that we had, naturally at that point Obama had won the primary vote and you'd get a reaction that reflects that. As time goes on, we discuss all of the issues that are on television, radio, and in print. But one of the things that's ignored generally where it comes to these polling questions is the changes in the electorate. There was a story in the Washington Post yesterday which reflected on that question and commented that in the state of Nevada, a fairly small state, the increase in the electorate since the 1st of January is 700,000 new voters. Yeah. The same phenomenon in Indiana saw 500,000 new voters since January 1st. A lot of those voters do not have landline phones. They did not vote in 2004. They did not vote in 2000. And therefore, they fall outside the methodology of most pollers.
Yeah.
Now, I say most, not all, because some are finally getting clever and at trying to pick up the young voter who does not have a landline phone.
But I'll suspect, Craig Rosen, that you think that John McCain really has tightened the race in Wisconsin despite these methodology problems with polling.
Yes, I think he has, even though polling tends to be inaccurate in states like Wisconsin that has registration at the polling booth on the day of the election. I was a poll watcher in 2004, and there were 1,600 people registered to vote at the location that I was watching. And by about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 1,600 people had voted, and the lines were still way out the door. And so it doesn't reflect in states like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Massachusetts, the tremendous number of new people voting. And he's right about landlines. Younger voters tend to just have cell phones. But still, remarkably, the polls are fairly accurate. If they were completely accurate, we wouldn't bother to have elections. And I think two factors have played a part in John McCain getting closer in the polls. One, he picked Sarah Palin, and she has reinvigorated the base of the party. We know more about Sarah Palin just after a few weeks than most people feel they know about Barack Obama. And the economy, 46% of Wisconsin voters say economic issues are the most important in this election, and they're just not willing to take a risk. They don't know what change is. Change isn't a strategy, and hope isn't a plan. They're more likely, in my opinion, to vote for stability.
Do you expect, though, that to change Professor Mershart with the focus on the economy and in Barack Obama's,
Basically, we have a new electorate, and it'll be interesting to see how it votes. I think it's an infirm tool to use the polls, and yet it's what we have. I'm convinced that if the results in November are as the Democrats hope, then I suspect your polling methodology will begin to change. People will find new techniques for sampling opinion, and they'll be a little less sanguine about making cosmic judgments over the overnight polling, which takes a sample of a few hundred people and projects it on the entire nation.
Let me jump in with some other issues. We are running,
sure.
Running out of time. The co-chair of John McCain's campaign in Wisconsin is the state Attorney General, J.B. Van Hollen. He filed a lawsuit to force the Government Accountability Board, the state's elections agency, to check the accuracy of the names on the voter registration lists. And this was in court this week. A judge will consider a motion next week to disqualify J.B. Van Hollen from the suit, saying that the Attorney General shouldn't be suing another state agency. So there's some back and forth going on with this particular case. But I'm wondering your reaction, Craig Rosen, first. Should J.B. Van Hollen be suing the Government Accountability Board over voter registration accuracy?
I think it was appropriate. You know, the Attorney General comes to the defense of most state agencies. If they are in a lawsuit, the Attorney General is likely to defend them, whether it's the Department of Transportation, Department of Administration, many other departments. The state law that says an attorney can't sue his own client, I don't think should apply to the Attorney General because it's a special position. It's not him personally doing it. It's his department. And so what's at issue here is two conflicting views. One, we want fair elections, restrict the number of fraudulent votes, and of course we also want all eligible voters to be able to vote. And Wisconsin is 2 years behind in comparing data from license registrations driving license registrations right. with voter registrations. And it was required 2 years ago, and the state, because of a two-year glitch, which seems incredibly long, hasn't gotten around to doing it. And he's saying it has to be done before the election. And there is voter fraud in Wisconsin. I'd always like to highlight this case, somebody who ran for state senate as a Democrat in Milwaukee, claiming that his Democratic opponent in the primary wasn't liberal enough, and his fifth issue was fair elections. And to make sure I don't libel anybody, I pulled up the Wisconsin Circuit Court Axis, and Donovan Riley, running for state senate as a Democrat, actually was convicted of election fraud, falsifying voter registration. It happens. I've been tracking several people I'm trying to catch in Douglas County who are not living at the addresses they claim, seem to vote, move around. There is voter fraud. 4,500 people voted in Milwaukee in 2004, and when the county tried to verify their addresses, it showed up as parking lots, billboards, children's playgrounds. You know, we want fair elections. We want every eligible voter to vote, but in a state that can be decided by 5,000 votes, we're talking about just maybe one person per polling area where several thousand vote can throw the entire election. It's got to be fair. Everybody's got to have a chance.
And you think it's okay if some folks are knocked off that list because of a typo? That's what
the
critics are saying.
Well, they get to re-register. You know, there have been several plans. Governor Doyle has vetoed three times photo ID at the polls, even though there were provisions for if you were low income, it would be paid for by the state. If you couldn't register on the day of the election, you could cast a provisional ballot and it could be taken care of days afterwards. Lots of safeguards to guarantee that everybody would be eligible to vote, but that you only get to vote once and you have to be registered in the area for which you're supposed to vote. You know, border communities like Superior, Milwaukee, Janesville, seem to have a problem with people coming across state lines or people voting more than once. We have the most lenient voter registration laws in the nation, and it causes problems, and it's because the elections are so close.
Yeah. Let's get Professor Mershart. Is this causing problems? Do we have this voter fraud problem?
Well, I went to my computer and checked whether or not I was a registered voter. I was told I was not.
Really?
And apparently it had to do with whether or not I include my middle initial. Mm-hmm. People who have names that are divided, O'Connor, DeGrand, just to pick two people from my own family, are likely to be told, no, you're not a registered voter. Now, it happened that I persisted and I tested various modalities of my name that might have been used at one time or another on automobile registration or on my personal driver's license. And I finally managed to find that not only was I a registered voter, but it gave me a list of every vote I'd cast since 1968. I haven't missed an election in all that time. There are a lot of places where I'd voted. But the first time around, the response of the apparatus, which the state has created, said I wasn't a registered voter. That's the kind of thing that we're looking at, where at the moment when you walk into the polling place, where now it's true, you can register at the polls, you can even register a change of address or a change of status if a woman has married and so forth. Those things can be fixed at the polls. If we go to this rigid system, as suggested by Mr. Van Hollen, we're going to turn people away from the polls in significant numbers, which is exactly what the Republican Party and John McCain's campaign wants.
No, it
in
doesn't.
State after state, we've fought this issue. It's gone to the federal courts, and the federal courts have found for the power to reject people from voting. It doesn't err on the liberal side of letting people vote if they happen to have moved or changed their status or changed the spelling of their name.
Yeah, so this is not disenfranchising voters?
No, because they can register at the election booth on the day of the election, and if there's a difficulty, they can cast a provisional ballot. Basically, it's to guarantee that only eligible voters vote. We want every eligible voter to have the opportunity to vote. They're not going to be turned away at the door.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a governor that's rejected photo IDs at the poll three times, and many other states have instituted it. It's been declared legal by the Supreme Court, and we need to establish it here.
Let's get a caller in on this. Bob in Hortonville is on the line. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead,
some
please.
Years, I don't know how well you can hear me. I'm driving, and I got one of these earphone things on.
Go ahead.
But some years back, they said everybody had to have an ID, the cash checks or whatever. Even if they didn't have a driver's license, they had to have an ID, so everybody went out and got these IDs. What's wrong with using the ID that they have? What's wrong with using a driver's license? If a person is registered, driver's license. That's all it takes. It's a driver's license and a personal ID.
Yeah, all right. So, Ron Merchart, this isn't so hard, according to Bob.
Yeah, if in fact the law requires that, then we'll deal with it. It does in Indiana. It doesn't currently in Wisconsin. You can use a variety of sources of identification, showing your address and your name and what have you. If we turn to a more rigid posture on this, then the voter will adapt to it. But to do this as you approach an important election is, I think, a dodge.
The requirement was to do it 2 years ago, and the Attorney General is making sure that the Help America Vote Act by the federal government is being enforced. We have a problem with voter registration in Wisconsin. More than 100 voter registration workers in the Milwaukee area are being referred for prosecution for improperly registering people to vote. We need to get a handle on this, and just waiting until November 5th is not the solution.
The League of Women Voters doesn't agree with you. They've studied the situation in Milwaukee and said they've identified 3 improper votes, not thousands of votes. So apparently it matters who is counting, who is looking, and who has a vested interest in the situation.
Well, part of that difficulty of deciding was a vote cast improperly or not is the problem of knowing how many people should have been able to vote. It's like a bank trying to prove embezzlement when they don't know how much money they had to begin with. We need a better database. We need to be checking databases, driver's licenses with voter registrations and other databases to guarantee that everybody who's eligible to vote can vote, and only those people. I think the Attorney General is correct. I don't think he has a conflict of interest. I think he's doing his job, and he's doing it well.
We started this morning talking about fun things to do in this area, beautiful things to see in this area. We only have a minute left, not time to take another topic up, but you two aren't off the hook. What's your favorite thing to do in the fall or your favorite place to visit in this neck of the woods?
The Magic Golf Course. It's a beautiful golf course. It's owned by the city of Superior. It's privately run, and in the fall, losing golf balls in the middle of the fairway underneath the leaves as they turn color around you is just wonderful. I love to go out there and lose 100 golf balls in late October. It's just wonderful.
You got something real quick for us, Ron?
Well, whenever we had a new faculty member who was being interviewed on the UW campus, I used to take them and drive them out Wisconsin Point and let them see what it looks like to be there embraced by the lake on both sides.
Sounds beautiful.
It's a gorgeous moment.
Oh, thanks to both you very much for being here. I wanted to kind of end on a positive note. Craig Rosanne, chair of the Douglas County Republican Party, and Ron Merchart, professor emeritus of history at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Thank you, and thank you to everybody for being here. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.